Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject today of soul and body. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining us. And we will start with our morning prayer today.
This morning I'm reading from Miscellaneous Writings 368 and Christian Science versus Pantheism, page 15. Let us not forget that the Lord reigns, and that this earth shall sometime rejoice in his supreme rule, that the tired watchmen on the walls of Zion and the true Christian scientists at the foot of the Mount of Revelation shall look up with shouts and thanksgiving, that God's law, as in divine science, shall be finally understood, and the gospel of glad tidings bring on earth peace, goodwill toward men. May our Father, Mother God, who in times past has spread for us a table in the wilderness, and in the midst of our enemies, establish us in the most holy faith. Plant our feet firmly on truth, the rock of Christ, the substance of things hoped for, and fill us with the life and understanding of God and goodwill towards men. May it be, Kennedy.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 34. Watch that you be consistent in your handling of error, not overlooking an error in yourself or claiming immunity from it, while you continue to hold it as real in another. In the habit of criticism, it is well to remember that that which does the criticizing is no more real or part of man than what is criticized. When someone in the family is ill, he suffers with feel sickness, in contrast to the others who suffer with see sickness. When error appears real to you, even though it may be manifested by another, it becomes part of your problem, which is to unsee and to make nothing of error, whenever and wherever it presents itself. I see myself as God's own child, as perfect in his sight. I see my brother man as well, a perfect child of light. Then, to complete my prayer, I see him seeing me aright. I see him seeing me seeing him as perfect in love's sight.
Thank you. It's one of my very favorites. All of you should have that little poem handy because it's so very easy to say, I'm seeing someone right, but they're seeing me wrong. And then you're not seeing them right if you're seeing them seeing you wrong. And so who else would like to talk about that?
I think this the whole watching point really is talking about God's allness, that it's only good is going on. So we should see good everywhere in everyone. Really, that's what it says to me.
If we Thank see you,
sickness,
yes.
see
What's
sickness.
It?
No, the see sickness bit is funny to me.
Yes. Very well stated, dear Carpenter. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, and this is the remedy for conflict between people, isn't it? Because this is the ultimate of divine love. Mm-hmm. This will defuse any thoughts that might be in the thought of others around you, about you, and it will totally just defuse any animosity or any hatred or jealousy or anything that isn't right in God's sight. This is how Christian Science heals.
Thank
He says he finds the perfect man. You know, everywhere he went, it's only perfection is what he saw. So.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is part of loving your enemies.
Mm-hmm. Except until you have no enemies. Who else was trying to speak?
It's been a reminder to me that we are all here to help and bless each other.
That's it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, very important.
Wait in the morning and know that we have the mind of God, that we express that mind, and not know that our neighbor has it too. That's just as important as knowing that we do.
Mm-hmm. It is just as important. But it's so easy, as I said, and I've heard it so many times, and I know I've done it myself, where you think you're seeing someone right, but they're not seeing you right. So that must be healed. It's part of the healing that goes on, and it goes on in thought. And when it goes on in your thought, you heal it, you heal the manifestation. And there have been many cases where things like that just turn around, even overnight or sooner. Chardell found it with her
grandchild.
Yes.
Yeah,
there had been something upsetting, and the grandson didn't want to talk to you again or
he
something.
He didn't for a while.
He didn't. And then through prayer, it totally changed. He came and visited and had one of the best visits ever. She testified to that on Wednesday. So this is the power of truth at work, power of love. And I've given this to many of you, but I've always loved it. It's in The Healer by David Keeston on page 145. Mimi Robertson wrote a letter to Mrs. Eddy at a time when she was exercised in her mind about a patient who showed great resentment toward Mrs. Eddy. Although she had not actually mentioned the patient, the reply from Mrs. Eddy contained the advice, turn your patient's thought to God and let love show me to him just as I really am. And the patient was healed. So turn your patient's thought to God and let love show me to him just as I really am. And that healed it because, you know, God speaks, of course, to all of us. And Mrs. Eddy knew this. So let love speak to this person, and this person will see me correctly, see Mrs. Eddy correctly in that case. And it healed it.
I think this is also the remedy for something that is a superstition among many Christian scientists who believe in malpractice. They believe that they are the object of malpractice,
you, yes.
Or somebody else is the object of malpractice. You're giving power to something other than God. And if you see your brother or sister correctly as having the mind of Christ, then there's nobody to malpractice.
Because otherwise it's that prayer of the Pharisees. Thank God I'm not as other
men.
Mm-hmm. We can also use that in working for nations.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yes.
There's no
assignment. But
exactly. There's no limit to the applicability
idea.
Of this. Yes.
Yes, that nations are warring against each other. They see each other incorrectly. And that beautiful article we have about the healing of the nations. Mm-hmm. By McCracken or one of them. And it says that they're just like a patient, like any other patient, that you have to see every nation correctly and that we do love each other and not all this warring and resentments. So.
Well, and this is the only antidote to the propaganda that is so, you know, flagrant out there.
Well, if mind is infinite, then infinity. I mean, everybody has the Christ mind in truth.
Yeah.
Well, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think of a nation. What is a nation? Well, it's people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God's image and likeness.
Thank you. There are many times in Signs and Health where Mrs. Eddy refers to the control of mind, the control of God. It's in our lesson twice this week. And on page 514, she says, understanding the control which love held over all, Daniel felt safe in the lion's den, and Paul proved the viper to be harmless. All of God's creatures moving in the harmony of science are harmless, useful, indestructible. A realization of this grand verity was a source of strength to the ancient worthies. It supports Christian healing and enables its possessor to emulate the example of Jesus. And God saw that it was good. So this goes along with the watching point. Seeing everything correctly and understanding love's control over all. Now, that word control means power, authority, command, and to have power to run something in an orderly way. So this is what God does, controlling everything. It's over and over in Signs and Health. So if you think something is out of control, then your focus is blurry, and you've got to bring it back home to the truth. And in the lesson this week, it says 12, Signs and Health, and if we have triumphed sufficiently over the errors of material sense to allow soul to hold the control, we shall loathe sin and rebuke it under every mask. Only in this way can we bless our enemies, though they may so construe our words. Now, soul to hold the control. And truly, it's interesting, because if you are under that control, you will rebuke error. Error will be an offense to you. And it comes as a mask. It's never person, place, or thing, as we know. It's always animal magnetism. And then, again, the last number 15 in Science and Health, about the El Dorado of Christian Science, involves the science of life and recognizes only the divine control of spirit, in which soul is our master and material sense and human will have no place. Again, the divine control of spirit. Everything under God's control, including you and all your organs and everything about you, if you allow God to control you in this way. And think about it during the day. It's a wonderful thing to think about. I love to think about it. So, all right. And before we go any further, I just wanted to remind people, our December, our Christmas Liberator will be coming out next month, and you're all invited. Any of you that have websites, those of you who are artists or do other things, and you would like to advertise your website or advertise whatever it is that you make or do, we're inviting you to do that. We'll have a page or two of that. We've heard from a couple of you, right? But
yeah, about four or five.
Four or five. But if there's anyone who didn't hear that announcement, please contact.
Yeah, just Jeremy at plainfieldcs.com.
So, and this was such a beautiful short little article that was on our carousel this week by Peter V. Ross about the topic of soul and body. You want to know how mind can rectify bodily conditions. This is easy enough to understand when you recognize that you are mental throughout. You may try to separate yourself into soul and body, ascribing all intelligence to soul and none to body. But the fact is, soul and body are one. They are both mental. Body is the part of soul, or to use the new word, consciousness, which is cognizable to material sense. But it is mental. This is why it talks to you so much. Stop regarding yourself as both soul and body. Stop using the expression body at all, if you like, and regard yourself as consciousness. Then it is plain why a change in thinking will result in a change in what you've been calling body. for body is part of consciousness. Get the fear out of mentality, therefore, and you get the wobbles out of the body. So, again, Mrs. Eddy says, watch your thoughts, not your body. And if you seem to have some wax in your body, thoroughly comb your consciousness and see what's in there, what fears or negativity or what's binding you. So, anyone else on this? All right, Jeremy, read the golden text.
Romans. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service.
Thank you. And think about it. If you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is a reasonable thing to ask because he created you in the first place, then how could you have trouble walking? How could you have trouble seeing? How could you have trouble doing anything if you're giving yourself to God in this way? It's only aggressive mental suggestion that you have fallen for that gets you to think otherwise. I love this hymn, 324. I used to sing it all the time. I still sing it a lot. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my hands and let them move at the impulse of thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for thee. Take my voice and let me sing always only for my King. Take my lips and let them be filled with messages from thee. Take my every thought to use in the way that thou shalt choose. Take my love, O Lord, I pour at thy feet its treasure store. I am thine and I will be ever only all for thee. Couldn't get much more beautiful. It is a beautiful prayer to sing, to tell yourself again, your voice, your hands, your feet, every part of you. Take them, Lord, and let them glorify you.
And when we present our bodies a living sacrifice, what does it mean to sacrifice? We don't want anybody having the wrong impression here that you have to give up anything good. What are we to sacrifice?
Wrong sense of self. Mm-hmm. Self and matter rather than the self and spirit.
All the things not in first Genesis.
Hmm. Yeah. Somewhere Mrs. Eddy tells us the only things we have to sacrifice are sin, disease, mm-hmm. and the belief in death. That's what we are to sacrifice.
Thank you. And these are all hypnotic beliefs. And these beliefs are what keep you out of the Father's house. So dehypnotize yourself. You're hypnotized if you believe in these things. And it's called aggressive, as I've said, for a reason, because it is aggressive. But don't listen. Don't be part of it. You don't have to. It's not of God. Now, Carrie sent me this beautiful article by William McCracken, again, about control, mind's control over the body. I looked up William McCracken. You know, we have all these Scotsmen, McCracken, McKenzie, I think there's another one. But anyway, McCracken, William McCracken, he was actually born in Germany, but his great-grandfather or something was from Scotland. And he came to America. He went to Trinity College in Hartford, and then he went to school in University of Heidelberg in Germany, where he was from. But he, around the 1900s, became a Christian Scientist. It was later on, really, in his life. And I believe, I'm sure he knew Mrs. Eddy, and he was a good worker. He also, it was interesting, he would have this exchange with Mark Twain, you know, Mark Twain, who thought Christian Science was foolishness. And he and Mark Twain went back and forth a bit, but they evidently they became friends, good friends. So anyway,
people could debate back then without making it personal.
Thank you. Yes, they could. They yeah. could debate, and they'd end up still liking each other and not, you know, at war. So I'm going to share this with you because it was so relevant to today about mind's control over the body. From time immemorial, humanity striving to be better and purer has sought to control the body. And Mrs. Eddy tells us in Science and Health that it is important to understand the complete control which mind holds over the body. End of that quote. It would take many volumes to describe with any degree of accuracy the well-nigh innumerable ways and means which have been used by mortals in the attempt to bring their bodies into subjection. When the motive has been solely ethical or religious, the results have been apparently most grotesque and unsatisfactory. Efforts to chastise the body or to render it insensible have led to pitiful exhibitions and mutilations, thus making the physical more conspicuous and more obtrusive instead of reducing it to relative unimportance. So likewise has the attempt to control the body by drugs, manipulations, injections, and the like proved unfortunate. The more attention the body has received, the more it is seen to demand. Even when the motive has been purely aesthetic, the pampered flesh has not rewarded the care expended upon it, and real beauty has vanished in proportion as artificial aids have been considered necessary. Perhaps the least illogical of the illusions about the body has been the athletic point of view, which seeks to gain and to establish power, grace, and activity and place, and place the body in subjection to the law of dominion by exercising it. It should be recognized that law is mental, not physical, and therefore to bring the body into subjection to law for any purpose, whether it be religious, curative, aesthetic, or athletic, necessarily involves a mental modus operandi. Christian Science shows how this control is to be accomplished in a Christian Science, Christian and scientific manner. The general practice of doing this has seized the problem at the wrong end. The right practice is just as necessary today as it was in the time of Paul and involves being absent from the body and present with the Lord. Paradoxical as it may seem, the only sure way of controlling the body is to be absent from it. To be present with Christ's truth means the rejection of materiality and reveals man as holy, spiritual, governed by the law of God, spirit, not by matter. Obviously, then, the true way of controlling the body is to make it subservient instead of masterful, is to turn away from the contemplation of it. It is not possible to reach the kingdom of heaven, the consciousness of the presence of God as all, by a choice of foods. Neither dieting nor fasting can procure for us this state of consciousness, but being present with the Lord can and does accomplish this. And then he quotes, present your body a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God. Lay down this false sense of man as a material body. Even the generally accepted teachings of anatomy and physiology, and present man as the spiritual and incorporeal idea of divine mind. Then the sacrifice of the false is complete, and the presentation of the true has taken place. Now, that is so true. We live in this world where everybody is, you know, it's all about the body worship. And I certainly believe, you know, as I've said, and Bignell Young will say it too. It's right to get some proper exercise, to eat as well as you can. But generally speaking, not to make a god out of any of this stuff like we see.
It's because God has made us a steward of the body. We're supposed to take care of it in that respect.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And he provides good food for us. He provides, you know, good for us. But that's so that we can do better what his will is. When we do his will, he takes care of us. When we don't, you know, we forfeit his care, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah.
We need to have other gods before him. We cannot make a god of our bodies. The obsession, I think, is the problem. No.
Yes, indeed. It's the obsession of it.
And he's given us the wisdom to think and act rightly.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, the Jersey girl has come home. Janet's with us today. She's no longer a Georgia girl. She's a Jersey girl. Anyway,
yeah,
but Georgia's in her heart, yes. So, yes, he gives us the wisdom to know what to do and how to eat and yeah, get proper exercise, move about. It's not good to be overly sedentary, and it's not good when someone, you know, told Mrs. Eddy, I don't know, they were doing something that was unwise, and she said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. If you have to eat, as we've talked about, food that's maybe not the best, if you have to, you can do it without any consequences. But for the most part, it's good to eat natural, healthy food, as did Jesus, as did Mrs. Eddy. It's all gotten very different these days. And so we should have some wisdom in what we eat. And also to get out in the fresh air, enjoy God's world, enjoy his universe. This is our Father's world, as a beautiful song goes. So.
But this is effect and not cause. It mm-hmm. The cause of all of this is God. And we can't forget the cause.
It has helped me to eat good things or go for a walk, because I often do too much and don't stop and don't take care of myself. Mm-hmm. But to think I'm doing that to be able to serve God better and to fulfill everything that I'm required to fulfill by God, then it helps a lot to take care of myself, to do the work.
Thank you. And that's the purpose of it. That's take my life and let it be. You want to serve God, so you want to be in good shape to do it. And in the lesson in Divine Science, man is sustained by God, the divine principle of being. The earth at God's command brings forth food for man's use. Knowing this, Jesus said, take no thought of your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, presuming not on the prerogative of his creator, but recognizing God, the father and mother of us all, is able to feed and clothe man as he doth the lilies. I mean, what could be more beautiful than the lilies?
Mm-hmm.
Any of the flowers. And God takes care of them, right?
Yes.
So we should be that as well. And this is the right sense of body, but leave it mainly out of your thought. If you're obsessed, as I think Florence just said, if you're obsessed with things, then you know you're off. In the book Spiritual Precepts by Gilbert Carpenter, which we were, they were going to sue us for publishing this book, which is why I don't mention it often. But now you can buy it at David Keeson's website and also the bookmark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these books, they're out now. Thank God they are. Mrs. Eddy writes, if you spiritually take less thought of what appetite craves or desires, about what you eat or drink, Then you will drink water instead of coffee, tea, or stimulants, and save much expense in cooking and groceries. Your clothing will abide instead of pass away. Your thought will so replenish yourself with wearing apparel that your clothing will be like the widow's oil rather than the fashionable lady's wardrobe from Parisian models, and much time saved for usefulness instead of being expended on shopping and selecting and fitting garments. You will desire that place in society and the world which removes you furthest free from the fate of ambition is its snare. Its only rationality is madness. We should yearn and aspire to rise above the world, its sorrows, or its favors, with as great earnestness as to triumph over sickness, sin, and death. For worldly ambition leads to the path of these conditions, which are forbidden and forsaken in Christian Science. So, anyway, she, you know, Mrs. Eddy, my understanding of her, she always looked absolutely beautiful. I know she ate simply, but she ate well. Her surroundings were all beautiful. Why? Because it's godly to be that way. That's not a bad thing. It's bad if you let it take you over and it is your ambition and you want to do it to look better than anybody else. That's a terrible reason and motive.
No, she did it to welcome people in her home and let them feel the beauty and the love of God. She was not trying to impress anybody. She had no human motive in doing so. She only wanted to bless those that came into her home. And it did.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you all for such beautiful inspiration always. I want to share about that part before about eating. I think everything to me is being out of prayer that we go with Genesis 1, not with really what person did what. Because Genesis 1 has right there everything that was truly given from the Creator to us to eat. It is so clear when we read in Genesis what it says that it was for us and the animals to eat. It is very clear. And I had to pray very much to understand what it says, because we've been programmed so much that being deceived about what it says, the whole world was giving, all humanity was giving the wrong thing. It was twisted, it was misunderstood, it was a big deceit for humanity. But if we read in Genesis 1, the chapter of creation, what it says to eat for us and the animals, I believe that is true from God. And we must not look at what person does what, because many people haven't really studied and pray with Genesis 1 about what it is right for us to eat.
Thank you.
What a blessing to do that.
That's up for everyone to evolve into that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share with you something about Mrs. Eddy, how she looked. This was also in the Healer. It was an inspiring account from Elizabeth Earle Jones, a teacher of Mrs. Eddy's day. She got the opportunity to meet her, and she said, I remember thinking of the time because Mrs. Eddy was looking upwards like she was communing with the Father. And it said her eyes looked black and luminous. She wore a purple velvet dress, an ermine cape, a small purple and ermine bonnet with a black velvet band under her chin. Her hair was soft and curly and snowy white. She was a rarely beautiful, exquisitely refined, yet forceful woman. She sat erect in her carriage like a lady of the old school. There was a gentle elegance about her and a great spirituality. She seemed centuries above even the best of humanity today. I do not know how Mrs. Eddy looked at the others, but when she seemed to swoop down from heaven to greet me, she seemed to look clean through me with a sweetly searching, penetrating look, like a great searchlight turned and fell upon me. I felt glad, however, to be searched by such wonderful love. I did not know there could be such love in all the world. It warmed me through and through and lifted me high above the plane of human consciousness. I had never been on that plane before and have never been entirely on that plane since. The crushing load just melted into nothingness, and I felt so happy and free and strongly uplifted. For days I seemed to walk on air. I cannot describe the uplift and acceleration of that divine love which dear Mrs. Eddy radiated. Everyone and everything I saw seemed to be baptized in that divine love. I can imagine from this experience what it must have been to come into the presence of Jesus. There is nothing like it, and it was one I will never forget. So these beautiful descriptions of our leader and how she lived in her grace, her love, her warmth, it's something to emulate with ourselves. And she certainly took proper care of herself and her body, but it was for the most part left out of thought because she had great work to do. So, and so it is. And remember, truly, it is in your consciousness. Now, anyone else want to speak or have anything they wanted to add about all of this?
Well, she does say that the best way to take care of yourself is to leave body out of thought and, you know, concentrate rather on the thought of God.
She does. And not just once or twice, but quite a bit, right? Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, in the lesson, thank you, Florence. In the lesson this week, it's interesting because it speaks about the beware of the leaven. It can beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And reading about the leaven of the Pharisees, it's very interesting because it's called in that you got questions or something you didn't find online. It says that the yeast of the Pharisees, the leaven of the Pharisees, was hypocrisy. And Jesus's point was the teaching of the Pharisees were pervasive and produced hypocrisy and unbelief. The yeast or leaven of the Pharisees was a subtle yet pervasive influence the Pharisees exalted over people. Those who follow the Pharisees might demand signs, but they would gradually increase in unbelief until they had hardened hearts, just as the Pharisees. Their corruption advanced in hardly perceptible ways, but it was extensive. Jesus denounced the Pharisees on several occasions. By warning the disciples against the hypocrisy or leaven of the Pharisees, Jesus sought to keep his followers from the insidious influence that would undermine faith and corrupt their walk with God. Believers today should heed the same warning from the Lord and guard against Pharisaic attitudes and the temptation to take pride in man-made teachings and traditions. Once a bit of Phariseeism is introduced into the church, it can quickly spread. So I thought it was interesting, mainly because it's hardly perceived at first. It's very, very subtle. It just works on you. So this is why we watch our thought, is the way we do, to make sure nothing like that enters in, that we get hypocrisy or disbelieving or questioning or doubting the truth of this science.
And you will hear some people, even in the church, talk about having to adapt science to current society. you know, using terms like that to justify unbelief or even to justify hypocrisy.
Thank you.
Beware. Because it's not science.
And all that would just make the strong man stronger and even harder to bind.
It's true. It is true. And so this is where we are, you know, we keep ourselves separate from the world and all those beliefs. Always go back to your books and make sure you're staying on the course that's intended. And all these things that I read, you know, from that McCracken article, these are just ways it kind of seeps in at you, gets you to look in other directions rather than to God for everything you need, whatever that is. God has all the answers every time. It's wonderful.
Well, things that are immutable can't be adapted. That's the whole
thing. Exactly.
It's like truth is truth. You don't adapt truth. It is just truth.
Yes.
Exactly. And yet there are people who will espouse doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's a clue that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, Gary and I would.
It's very insidious how those suggestions want to come all day long if you're not in tune and watching your thought. Even just the suggestion of you have to exercise your body, really, you have to turn that around and see what, you know, exactly what you've been talking about the whole time, what your body is and what, you know, what joy it is to move your body and how much gratitude you should have, but not that you're trying to, you know, impress or that you're afraid of not exercising your body. So it's a lifelong, it's a minute by minute thing that we have to do in spiritualizing our thought. And it's so gratifying that you give us so much instruction in that direction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yes. The idea of the moving your body, that's all your motive. You know, what is your motive?
What is your motive?
Yeah.
Because she says,
take no thought.
Yeah. She says here, man is not a material habitation for soul. He is himself spiritual. That's the truth.
So we just be aware and awake and alert to these things. And that's how God made us, as Janet was saying. He's talking to us all the time. He's letting us know what we need to know, what we need to be aware of when something isn't right. Gary and I were listening to something recently. It was interesting. It was from 2003, but it was an audio, not by someone in science, but kind of someone observing and kind of observing a rift in the Christian Science Church.
It was a newspaper reporter a television news reporter who was reporting, reading an article that she wrote.
And it started off, you know, it was a scene at the church center, the solstice or something. They were celebrating the solstice. By that, a lot of people were there. Little children were splashing around in the reflecting pool. And they were asking the people, well, do you know anything about the church? And nobody did. They thought it was a cult or they didn't believe in doctors. But, you know, they were having a good time. And the church doing this was trying to be more open and transparent because they were acknowledging, I hate to even say this, this is a dying religion, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So then it goes into, there were like two groups, two factions, and one was saying, well, you know, and this guy, I've heard of this guy because some of you have told me about him. His name is Evan
Malkenbacher.
Thank you. Yes, he has a website. He's a practitioner. He's from Washington State. And he, you know, I think he's done a lot of good things. And he said that let's not think of it a religion, but as laws and rules of the universe, something to that effect, which I totally agree with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then he said that, you know, they're trying to be more open-minded. They're going to New Age events and stuff and selling science and hell. They're giving out science and hells. Okay, well, That's good. It spoke about a woman who, she was Indian. She had practiced the Indian, whatever the Indian religions are.
Mm-hmm. And
then, yeah, I think so. And then she became a student. I mean, I never can pronounce his name right. Deepak Chopra.
Yes.
Yes. She became a student of his, and she liked that. But then someone gave her Science and Health, and she said, wow, this is it. So she became a Christian Scientist, but she has no desire to ever go to church or anything. You know, she just working with a textbook. That was good. So good for that. And then, but then there was this other side saying that more traditional, some of these people, and that Evan Mellenbach said that, that, you know, if you're a seeker for truth and you want to take medicine, take medicine. Well, you know, we say that too, because everyone's on states and stages of this science, some very beginning, some, if you're up against something, you need temporary means, and then okay, we don't condemn it anyway. We don't condemn it. But this other side was saying, no, no, Mrs. Eddy said, no, no, you cannot mix it. This is an absolute science. And so perhaps, you want to say anything about it, but it's an interesting conversation.
I don't know. The thing about temporary means, it's like, you know, if your car breaks down, you get a tow truck, but you don't keep that tow truck.
Yes.
You just use it until you.
Thank you. Good example. Good example. Exactly. You might dip in, but then you get out as fast as you can.
Yeah. I think it's really when people, where is your heart? I mean, it's your heart to follow this new old thing that you found, or is it to mix the two ongoing, you know? Some people, they just want to do, it's a temporary thing, and it's very clear it's temporary. But their heart is to find God, to find, you know, to go forward with this truth. So there's a difference. I think Mrs. Eddy, you know, a lot of people in the mainstream cannot, you know, go forward, can't talk to any practitioner because they're on medication, for example. And
yes.
And that, I don't know if that's what Mrs. Eddy meant. I think she meant if someone wants to go that way, then let them go. But it's an individual thing, one.
And what she meant was for their own good. In other words, practice science or practice medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But science doesn't work if you try to mix it.
Yeah.
But this whole article, where you come out, this whole article was trying to judge the science by what the organization was doing. It was talking about the disagreements within the organization. It was talking about how some people who criticized the board were excommunicated, and we know what that's all about. You know, that's nothing new. But it was more about the organization rather than the science.
Sure.
So, you know, it might not have been that useful to most people, except for gossip or whatever. Or
no, it was interesting to see what's evolving in the. It was interesting in that way. It wasn't. I didn't find it gossiping at all. It was interesting to hear what people were saying, what they were thinking. I mean, this one guy who wasn't a Christian Scientist, but seemed sympathetic toward it. He said, well, it's very hard to be a Christian Scientist because instead of, popping a pill, you've got to pray, you've got to live.
It demands a lot.
Yeah, it demands a lot. And I said, yes, you're right. That's true. It does. So it was an interesting dialogue to me. And it shows that I do feel there is progress being made. And someone said how now is the time for science because people are sick of all the medication, the vaccines. Mm-hmm. They're ready to turn to something else. So here we stand. And whoever does it, and in whatever way they introduce the science, just like to this Indian woman, I say hallelujah. We'll be grateful for any progress that's going on in that direction.
But so, Christ Jesus
said, Mr. Fetty has said, at some point, the world will all wake up and see signs of it.
Yes, yes.
Where are the people that turn people away from Christianity or science?
Exactly.
You know, because they that make other people's hearts hard, they are the real guilty ones, like, you know, I guess the Pharisees. Yeah. And so we need to offer, open our hearts to each and anyone who has a desire to learn. And if you, she also says that acute and chronic stages of a disease are healed by Christian Science, but a higher understanding is of the divine principles needed. So people are going to grow. I've just healed diabetes quickly, but occasionally I have a flare up and it's chronic. So I need to understand more about the divine principle. And that's not a sin, just a matter of growth.
Thank you.
But you don't blame Christian Science for that.
Yes. No.
You accept your own accountability. That's so important.
That's yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so we're going to conclude now with a short article
given to us by Carrie.
By Carrie, entitled Turn Right by Charlotte Paulson from a 1925 journal. And she writes, we are told in the scriptures that when they who wandered in the wilderness in a solitary way found no city to dwell in, they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he led them forth by the right way, that they might go to a city of habitation. This is surely comforting. But contrary to mortal opinion, which claims that experience is the best teacher, Christian Science operates in human consciousness to prevent the experiences where lessons will be learned only through suffering. Mrs. Eddy lovingly admonishes us in miscellaneous writings, cherish humility, watch, and pray without ceasing, or you will miss the way of truth and love. Then let us ever be alert to watch for, read, and heed the waymarks, not of evils forbidding or foreboding, which the memory of unhappy human experience conjures up, but instead, the clearly defined and unerring direction of the Christ way, wherein lie divine protection, healing, and spiritual comfort. Though at times we seem to wander in a wilderness of material sense impressions, with starved affections, and apparently with no way out and no abiding place at hand, let us lift our thought to the Christ and give up egotism and self-will to sit at Jesus' feet, giving thanks that his teachings presented to the world centuries ago are still with us, vitalized by that spiritual animus which Christian Science reveals for the meeting of every human need. Only God himself knows all that concerns his children, and he is ever present to indicate his will as a good will and pleasant to obey. How many turns must be made in the road before mortals are ready to abandon the symbols through which, by reversal, they learn about principle? None can tell. In vain do we judge, criticize, or condemn. The watchful care given each sparrow will be exercised with infinite compassion for all that exists, until divine mind is known to be the only mind, the only cause and creator, and the universe of right ideas is seen to be the product of that divine mind. Meanwhile, we can hasten that glad day of pure understanding by unswerving devotion to the right and consecrated effort to follow the right insofar as we see it.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.